This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Okay, thank you for that introduction. You're not going to learn much from me because I'm just a moderator, I'm the timekeeper, and I understand that you're here today because you probably have volunteers working in your organization. You need to recruit volunteers to work in your organization, and then once you have them and you have them trained, it's awful nice to hang on to them for a little while. So ask the panelists to go ahead and come forward. Go ahead and come forward and perch yourself on a perch. I'm going to allow each of the panelists to introduce themselves.
Hi, my name is Laverne Beachy, and I work at Volley Boys Camp, located in Lock Haven, Pennsylvania. And we're an outdoor therapeutic program that I work with boys, ages 9 to 16. Boys that have behavioral, emotional struggles. And we try to give them life skills that they can take back home with them and integrate them back into their families. And so that's where we're at, our licensed program in North Central PA.
I am Jonas Beiler from McConnellsville, Ohio. I represent the Amish Mennonite Aid. The acronym for that is AMA. AMA is a more of a church planting organization. We operate in Kenya, Africa, Paraguay, Belize, and El Salvador. We as a family have served under AMA in Kenya for 5 years, and I now am country rep for Kenya and also recruiter. There's approximately about 57 staff that are not paid, but volunteer staff that receive an allowance in the organization, and one full-time person and a few part-time.
All right, I'm Phil Yoder, administrator at Hillcrest Home in Harrison, Arkansas. We're a nursing facility, but care is provided by both local staff and volunteers. About 45 or so volunteers that live on campus there and provide a lot of the care for that. So I've been with Hillcrest for about 17 years and involved in different roles, currently serving as administrator. Prior to Hillcrest, I called Illinois my home and grew up in a cabinet shop. So healthcare has been quite different, but I am grateful to have the opportunity to serve in that need, and I always have a love for working with people. One of the things that my passion is just to receive Christ's love and give it away to the people that he brings into my life, and I have lots of opportunities to do that every day there at Hillcrest.
We're going to jump right in with some questions about finding volunteer staff. Where do you look for VS candidates? Which church groups are you able to use? So they're speaking out of their own experience, their own organization's practices. Where do you get names for consideration? How do you decide where it's worthwhile to do presentations, as in trying to get your name out there? So we'll start with Laverne. We'll go right down the row, 1, 2, 3. And each of you, let's take one question at a time. Where do you look for VS staff, Laverne?
You know, probably the first place kind of comes to mind that when I start thinking about it, I'm looking for a staff is Bible schools. Because we're looking for our chiefs, our counselors, or, you know, that are 21 years old at least, and men that want to work in God's kingdom, right? And we're asking for a 2-year commitment, so it's a little more than some places maybe. But we would talk to Bible schools. We've done dorm meetings. We've done chapels. We've done some things like that just as far as exposure. If you've had people that have been exposed to camp also that go to Bible school, then you kind of can talk about camp as well. So I would say that's an area that we would spend some time looking for candidates. We'd also, just a lot of it's through word of mouth too. I mean, people that have been experiencing camp or saw camp or it was a staff person there that would say, hey, this person really needs to come to camp. And so they tell me, I contact them. So yeah, a lot of it does come through friends, family, associations, and so on. But that's where we would get a lot of leads.
Go ahead and answer that question right away. What church groups is Bald Eagle using?
Right. We are a parachurch ministry, so we bring staff from a lot of different churches. We've had chiefs that have come from Pilgrim churches. We've had chiefs from Keystone churches. We had a chief just here recently from the Bruderhof, which would be kind of a colony kind of place. a wide variety. Our board would be most comprised of a lot of different groups, actually, but kind of the three supporting groups would be Cumberland Valley, Keystone, and the BG Church. And so I would say we've had chiefs from all those churches and more. So we try to, we're after a lot of these men that come from these churches, and we ask them to support their home church. We're not necessarily saying they need to, come do whatever where our churches are or whatever, but support what the churches they come from.
Okay, Jonas, take a stab at those questions.
AMA is the supporting organization is by the Beachy churches. And, of course, we do look among ourselves, but we also look those outside of the constituency of same doctrine and similar practice, and those that would be willing to support the AMA mission policies. A lot of times in looking for people, for staffing, I will contact the board. The need is made known, and oftentimes we'll talk about that. We look for names and sending out emails, contacting church leadership, and even often I will contact those on the field for suggestions. A lot of times you have people that know of people who would maybe be willing to do this, and so I kind of take a fairly broad view at who might be out there. We do offer presentations in churches. Believe that exposure and creates an awareness and is an effective way to draw people into interest of the mission. And a lot of times we look for busy people. I make calls and I might get responses like, in my workplace I have such and such a position, or I serve in various offices in the church, and I might respond by saying, well, that's exactly what we're looking for. Even Jesus, when he looked for his ministry workers, who did he look for? He looked for busy people, people that were engaged, people that were involved. And so that's it's always an encouragement when I hear that. And well, I often like to listen very closely for any types of clues of levels of commitment or compatibility, consistency, integrity. And these are all things that help to kind of guide my thoughts toward recruitment.
Okay, Mr. Capel, what's your answer here?
I would say our greatest pool would be similar to Bald Eagle. Bible schools is one that we would make priority. Really, the other thing we have not done for a number of years is actually done church presentations. So we've not because we don't want to, it's just we focus more on Bible schools. The other one that we've really utilized and we believe has been most helpful is when people can experience your culture and your organization. So inviting youth groups, doing work projects, that has been very, very helpful in being able to find people that come. And so we have found that it's just most effective to be able to have people experience the organization the best, and is the best way possible for make that. And then also word of mouth and referrals for that. Church group wise, it is a variety. Hillcrest is under the MIC, which is Mission and Interest Committee, which is a Beachy board. So Hillcrest operates under that, but we would draw from a very diverse group of churches as well.
Okay, Laverne, what are proper ways to draw on a VS prospect to get them that they will at least give you a good look?
All right. Well, I think probably the best way to help someone kind of just make that decision that, you know, I want to come to camp is actually getting him to the property, getting him there. You know, I've talked to a lot of people on the phone and tried to explain camp and tried to explain what we do. But I feel like if you can get that prospective employee to come, or a VS worker to come, I think then they can actually see what we're doing. And there's something about being on the property and seeing boys, seeing our chief, seeing staff, and kind of getting a feel for what we do. To me, that speaks, and most times people want to be there, want to be a part of what's going on, just because they're able to be a part of it for a day or so. Especially with our chiefs that would come for a two-year commitment, we like to get them, we often offer a come spend a day at camp, or an afternoon even, maybe an evening. Maybe we'll get you in a group overnight to experience, you know, what that actually looks like and feels like to be a part of this thing that they've heard about. I also give books. We have some books about camp, some of the philosophy of camp, and different brochures and so on to help explain camp. But I think, getting them to the property, in my mind, is one of the key way to help them just go ahead and commit and say, you know, I want to be a part of this ministry.
Okay, Jonathan, Phil, was it pretty much the same for you, or is there some difference in it?
I would maybe add to that, if there's contact or there's interest, to be prepared to answer questions that they may have about what's happening. Especially for us, being a foreign mission, it's not easy for us to go visit that country or go see that place. So just have good answers, encouraging answers for them.
Okay. I would concur with what Laverne shared as far as just connecting with them and getting them to experience the culture as much as possible is the most effective way.
Get them to show up. Okay. Mr. Jonas, do you have somebody you're interested in or somebody that's made an inquiry? How do you go about evaluating their background and moral character so you're not bringing in bad seeds?
I usually make leadership contact for a potential yeser and try to learn as much about that person as I can before I make a contact to that person. One of the processes that we do is when a name comes and I look at it and I float that name across the board and try to learn as much about that person or if they know anything about them and kind of move forward from there. And if there's clearance given there, I'll contact leadership and see how things are and try to get the blessing from them. And then I'll make a contact with the potential worker and engage in conversation about the work or opportunities that we have. And often we'll send out a packet that includes just various, like handbook or policies and a list of things that they can look at and evaluate. And if there's interest and they give a commitment, I like to connect with them, whether it's visit them or meet them at a restaurant or something and just simply talk about their lives. And I find that asking difficult questions is not really an easy thing. It takes thoughtfulness to ask these questions, but I also find that when you ask a blunt question kindly and objectively, a first response and watch for the responses can sometimes give a window into what might be happening or red flags might go up. And when it leads to meaningful conversation and things like that, it's just such a blessing. But when there's otherwise, then I would, you know, do maybe a little more background and checking and see what people know about things and try to get clearance that way. So it's one of those things that even I realize that a person with particularly moral failure or involved in pornography and those kinds of things, these men especially become con men in being able to just kind of gloss over these things and hard to detect at times. But if it shows up in the field and there's failure there, at least we have done our due effort and diligence to understand that. And we have, so I don't know that that issue is necessarily a, I don't know how to make that proof free, but at least we do an effort for that. And that's kind of the process that I go through.
Phil and Laverne, do you briefly have any comment to add on there or not?
We'll just add, we obviously we're maybe recruiting a little different clientele than what Jonas is recruiting. We would have a, upon an application, they would ask, we would ask for three or four references, one from the parents, one from the pastors, and from an employer and friend. So we would send out a PDF document that rates them anything from work to character to relationships, all of those things, and try to get a broad base of that. That's our process.
And we would also do a similar letter like that to source background folks. Also, I just want to, I think, emphasize again and what you said, but asking those hard questions, I think, is important. You know, you get them at that initial interview, you got to talk about it. You got to ask those questions about, you know, morality and where we're at and who are you accountable to, and that we will expect to hold you accountable. Like, you know, if you're going to work here, it's a conversation we will continue to have. And who are you talking to now? And just that, the, that feels like there's a chain of communication going on, and it's not going to end because you came to camp. Or if it's not happening now, you know, we're going to follow up on this further. So I think it's important for that person to feel like it's important to us, and that we want to keep that conversation going while you're serving at camp.
Okay, thank you, Phil. Where's that balance between you're supposed to be trusting the Lord to send you the people that are supposed to be here, you're supposed to get out and do something to get them here?
I find this one here a challenge or a struggle, and I don't know. I see some other people chuckling here like you've been there. I found a quote, and I'm just going to read George Mueller. We all know George's faith and that, but I just thought he articulated this wrestle better than I could myself. So he says, here is the greatest secret of success. Work with all your might, but never trust in the least in your work. Pray with all your might for the blessing of God, but work at the same time with all diligence, with all patience, and with all perseverance. Pray, then, and work. Work and pray, and still, again, pray and then work, and so on all day of your life. The results will surely be abundant blessings. Whether you see much fruit or little, such kind of service will be a blessing. And I just thought that that sums it up so well, because I just don't think it's going to work for us to just be on our knees constantly praying but never picking up the phone call and calling. But I think you can fall into, and I sometimes fall into the trap that I just need to call more, and that the more you call, we think somehow can be more effective. But I think that the power of prayer in that is still a very, very vital part of that. And so I don't know how to separate the two. And George Mueller basically just said, you got to do both, and you got to do a lot of it. So,
okay, we want to keep moving along, but briefly, Jonas or Laverne. Any comment?
Well, praying helps to condition my own heart in making a call. And also, you know, sometimes when you have people to call and you wonder when's the right time to call, I would rather work through the process, give them a call, and let them wrestle with the answer.
And maybe just to add to that, too, I think, you can probably call too much, but I think a phone call, just because you thought of it, there's been quite a few staff that I've kind of made that random phone call, maybe a text, that they tell me, oh my goodness, you wouldn't believe when you sent that or when you called me what was going on. And I think, not that I'm always, you know, doing it all the time, but I think just being aware, like, hey, I should send him a text again, or I should make a phone call. And I think that the Lord, you know, can work through that as well, just making that, you know, touch and base a little bit.
Okay. Thank you all. Laverne, what do you all do to keep the ones you got?
We try to feed them well, one thing we do. We do have a really good, food program, but that helps our boys for sure. But no, we feel like community at camp is pretty huge. Take care of our staff, take care of our families, right? With boys, we make goals, we evaluate. That's kind of our program. We do that with staff as well. All of our chiefs, we would sit down with them, make goals. We evaluate with them. Some of our office staff, we try to do evaluations with them every probably 2 years, probably should be more. But we try to at least, and we do a lot of talking, throughout the year beyond just evaluation. But I feel like, talking about how we're doing our job, things we're not doing so good at, things we need to improve, I think is important. Talking about that, having open and honest conversations. Feel like the atmosphere of camp, trying to keep it a positive, keep it a affirmative, that we're doing all right, and even when someone isn't maybe doing so okay or not feeling so great, find ways to still bless that person as well. But then being honest too about the hard things too, and not just kind of brushing over it and kind of hoping it goes away because we're super positive. I don't think that's the answer either, but I do feel like having that attitude of affirmation or positivity that we're going somewhere and we have a community here, I think is important. Making each person feel like they're part of a team, something bigger than just themselves, and that their role is important. We need it. Camp needs everyone, not just the chief in the woods that gets the most attention maybe, but it's the maintenance man, it's our secretaries, it's our cooks, it's our family workers. It's each person, we really need, and helping those people feel like they are valuable in the role they play. And just having conversations. I feel like having conversations with our staff, talking, having good communication is important. Expecting maturity as well. Maybe not trying to micromanage everybody to death either, but expect some maturity and respect, toward the organization and what we're trying to do, not just control everything, but more talk about what our mission is, what we're trying to accomplish as a camp versus you must do these things, and if you don't, it's not okay. There'd be a few things, but helping people feel part of the team, I think, is probably the big thing.
Now, you're looking for full-time people to serve for 18, 24 months.
Right.
So how do you financially help them, that longer commitment? What type of stipend do y'all give, or what do you do?
Like the ones beyond 2 years?
Up to two years.
We give them a $200 check per month. That's what they get. It doesn't.
They're getting their room and board, $200.
Right. Room and board, most of their food. Take care of them. But as far as financially, they're getting $200 a month, and that's it for the first 2 years. And then if they stay longer, then we put them on something different. But.
Okay. Comment, Jonas, or not particularly?
I think, it's pretty much the same as
you very soon. Jonas, what does staff care look like at AMA? Okay. How do you all take care of your people?
Well, we try to provide some structure and policies that take away the pressures that can easily cause conflict, but not so much policy that it becomes burdensome. We have unit leaders and social workers in our different countries. Good communication. And allow ourselves as a board to be involved with what's happening in their lives, whether it's their family or social or spiritual needs. Good board and staff relationships. I remember as being on the field, and sometimes we had our pastors' tables every Monday where we would sit together as pastors and discuss various things. And sometimes there was just things we didn't know how to figure out, and somebody would say, well, this is a board-sized question. So that was kind of where we would stop and take it to the board and let them help wrestle through these things. And I think that has helped a lot in just allowing the staff to feel cared for and to be feel supported, and those various things. Delegation trips, where we yearly we try to make visits to these different places, and we sit with the staff, and we sit and listen and hear what they have to tell us. We'll ask them, how can we make your serve better? Is there things we're missing? And I found it very effective also to, if we do delegation trips, to go back to previous delegation visits, review those things, see if there was anything on there that came up as a question or a need that they have. How's it? Has it happened? Is it fulfilled? What other needs do you have? Promote accountability and mentoring groups among the staff. Sometimes those are very helpful things. Give response to their questions. If they have a question about something, that we don't just neglect it, but we try to follow up with it. And also just ask questions. There's so much with the media we have nowadays. Communication is so easy, but easy as far as doing it, but maybe not so easy in just simply getting it done. But I that's kind of where we what we do to show our care for the staff.
Okay, a question for Mr. Phil. How do you actively build trust with people who work for you at Philcrest?
I find the subject of trust just fascinating. I love that, and it's kind of a passion of mine to try to do. I'm going to quote Andy Stanley. He says, "You don't know who you can trust until you trust them." And I just think that's really good. So to create a trusting culture, you have to trust people. And if you have a trusting culture, then trustworthy people want to be there. So early on, I gave a little introduction about myself. I'm going to give you just a little bit more what I think can help us build trust. So as a leader, I have had quite a struggle with feeling insecure. Leading and feeling like I have what it takes has not been easy for me. So when I came to Hillcrest as a 32-year-old young man, I was very insecure, and I believed that a lot of my value that I brought to the organization was measured by how well people liked me. God was gracious enough and kind enough that he gave me the job of holding staff to the policies. And I quickly figured out that I will not be liked by everyone. And that drove me to really being desperate about finding my identity. I tell you that story because there's something that happens when we're vulnerable. And vulnerability, I believe, is the greatest thing to build trust. When I feel like I can identify with someone and they have been transparent with something that they don't even have to be transparent with, there's something that happens and we build trust. So I believe just one of the practical ways is to tell your story. Share your mistakes and your failures with the people you're leading. They can relate to that, and I think that can be a big benefit. Healthy trust is a vulnerability-based trust. It's a trust that's open in giving and receiving feedback. And I just think that's very, very powerful in building trust in the culture. And that's probably been we've integrated some of our storytelling as administration, some of that in our two-day orientation. And I feel like that is, if I was to say one single thing that has shifted the culture in trusting and building trust, being vulnerable as leaders, I think has been probably, from my perspective, one of the things that has been most influential.
Okay, thank you. We've used about 30 of our minutes so far, so we're going to speed up in the second part here. We're going to talk about practical realities. All of you, just very briefly, for the type of work that you do at your organization, how long of a term of service is it practical that we got to have this? If you're going to come, we got to have you this much.
As a general rule, we're asking for 2 years. For all of our chiefs, and if you're going to come be a good counselor, yeah, we need 2 years. You need first year just to figure out what you're doing, and then the second year to enjoy it. And so that's a two-year thing. Our head cook, our secretaries are asking for 2 years. We'd have some one-year positions for some cooks and some summer help. And, you know, head maintenance guy still 2 years. So mostly 2 years at Bald Eagle.
Jonas?
Likewise here, we would ask for a two-year commitment. In Kenya, we have a two-month language class, which would be added to those 2 years. So it's basically a 26-month commitment. And that's, we just feel it takes that for, especially in a foreign land, to takes quite a while to adapt to the culture and the people and then to be effective.
Okay.
We require a 6 month, but really don't believe that that's the most effective. And most times we would see 15 months or longer commitments, but we do allow someone and kind of take the assumption that maybe if they come for 6 months, it can change their perspective and they choose to stay longer. And it's amazing how often that happens.
Okay, Jonas, you have both married staff, family, single staff. How do you compensate your staff? What's realistic? What's legal?
We pay a small stipend per month and assume responsibility for their food, their living, their nutritional and housing expenses. Medical expenses are handled through Anabaptist Healthcare. We also have a yearly vacation allowance, and after 2 years of service, we include a clothing allowance. And the supporting constituency, which would be the Beachy churches, take love offerings in the first quarter of the year, and those offerings are divided among the staff. It's kind of, they take the offering, or the offering that the totals of those get divided in shares, and then it's given to the current staff. As far as the legalities of the country, we pay for all the taxes or related expenses like work permits and whatever else is involved to that in the presence or in the countries in which they're serving. And, you know, a lot of times when you look at service, it's not a monetary profit to the individual. However, the rewards are out of this world. And so we do try to provide that they don't accrue debts and those kinds of things, that their needs are all provided for.
Okay, thank you. Mr. O'Byrne. Help you or hurt you that your staff have phones?
Well, it does help that a lot of our staff live in the woods, and so we don't carry phones. So we have 5 days a week, you know, our chiefs are on duty, they're in the woods, their phones stay at the office, and so that helps. The other thing, too, when we get off duty, obviously there's access to phones and so on. I think we try to talk about it. You know, if it's something that we feel like staff across the board are just using a lot and it's taken away from relationships, whether it be some off-duty event or something we're doing, it's like people on phones, you know, that's not promoting community, it's not promoting fellowship or relationship, right? So I think it's something we talk about. We want our off-duty time to be relationship building, something that's promoting camp community. And if we're looking at our phones all the time, that's not going to help. So something we just would make kind of known and we talk about. Also, on duty, I mean, with our supervisors and so on, we would, at Chuck Wagon, which is kind of our dining hall, keep our phones, you know, in a back room and not pulling them out all the time. And so there's kind of some things kind of set up that, hey, let's keep our phones here so it's not easily accessible when we're up with boys and so on. And then, yeah, it's something that we'll talk about even at intake, especially with our chiefs, how we use our phones, the distraction it can be. So ongoing discussion, honestly, to keep it where we want it to be. Helping our staff see the value of community as well, and they need to take responsibility for it. If they like it, Well, there's a reason that they like it, and that they're responsible to keep it that way. And what are ways we can keep our community and community feel in that way? And each one needs a first responsibility to continue that. And then if it's something that's not happening, we have the right or whatever to go back and talk about that. Like, this is something we want, something you want, and let's work at it together. So some is a discussion that we'll just have with our staff.
Okay, Mr. Phil, you all have dozens of young people there at Hillcrest. Can you give us a 15-second, what's the policy?
So we require all of them to have some type of filter accountable to you that gets sent to their group, mentor group. And so every staff is assigned to a mentor group, and in that group then there are goals set, there's discussions had about their how much time they're spending and helping them set goals to make progress.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Phil, what about staff evaluations? Do y'all do them? How important are they?
Yeah, so there's we have a variety of different types of staff, community staff, volunteer staff, and so it will vary a little bit. The thing I guess I wanted to say about evaluations, I think a formal evaluation is helpful. One of the things that I do not like is that when you have a formal evaluation with someone and what you address with them is a surprise to them. I feel like formal evaluations should be having those discussions prior to that annual time, and when the annual comes, it's not a surprise that you have this problem or that. So that's one of the things that I would say about formal. Another type of evaluation that I personally like is what is termed a stay interview. So instead of a performance evaluation that says, here's what you're doing right, here's what you're doing wrong, creating an evaluation that says, tell me how you're doing and tell me how we're doing, it creates a baseline for us to be able to have dialogue and they can express their feelings. So it's kind of from the perspective, seek first to understand before you want to be understood. And I think that can lay a really good foundation to have other conversations. And oftentimes, when they talk about their frustrations, they're feeling heard, and it gives you an opportunity to bring a different perspective.
Okay, thank you very much. Each one of you, bang, 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 right down the row, starting with Mr. Laverne. How do you manage male-female relationships at your organization?
Well, we're a boys' camp, so we don't have issues.
You've got a couple of folks wandering around.
Yeah, we do. No, we do. And yeah, it's as a general rule with our chiefs, you know, we've had some chiefs come dating, but not very often, and we kind of encourage them not to. If they're checking in before, if they're ready to be dating or they want to be pursuing a relationship, we often say, well, you know, pursue that. But camp needs all of you. Camp needs all your emotional energy. And if we have chiefs that want to date at camp, again, not necessarily a hard and fast rule, but it's more about, we talk about how the mission of camp is helping boys and families, and when you are putting your emotional energy towards someone else, even though that's a great thing someday, right now you're called to take care of your boys. And that makes a lot of sense. You know, it really does to our chiefs, and it's not something that they sit there and go, really? Because they understand that it does take a lot of energy. And so, but yeah, we've had some chiefs date, you know, maybe the last 6 months of their camp stay, or last three, whatever. But as a general rule, we kind of talk about it as you're at camp and go invest everything. And you'll feel better about it when you're all done. When you graduate and you head home, you gave it all. And you can go pursue that. You have time to go get after that sometime. But yeah, it's a conversation we try to have. Yeah, we do have those conversations.
Jonathan?
We would have a no dating policy for, you know, if there's two youth serving at the same place in the same area for the time in which they are there. We've had where there was those who started dating somebody from home or another community. A lot of times we just kind of look at the situation and try to evaluate the timing and everything involved, and so it's kind of a case by case thing that we work through.
Okay, Phil?
We would have a no dating policy there at Hillcrest for the people while they're serving together. If one of them leaves or something, we don't disallow them, but do try to keep them from, we believe that creating a healthy culture where they can have free interaction, trusting relationships without having to make a lot of assumptions of something going on, we have found to be beneficial.
Okay, and then this question goes to Phil first, and the others can chime in as well. What type of dynamics does it bring into an organization when you have married staff working versus single staff, young married staff, or families with a row of children chasing them around while they're there?
So I right away realized that there will be, each unit will be different, each organization will be different. Just some things that I wanted to promote here is that raising a family in an organization or on the mission field is a good thing. Like, it can be very positive. There's sometimes a negative vibe where people don't think that you can raise your family on a mission field or in a service unit. And I just say, no, you can. It is possible. I think it can be a real blessing. One of the things that I think as organizations, we need to be intentional with making what's expected sustainable. We've had one of the leaders prior to me was very intentional about making the sustainability of the family's workloads something that can be sustained for longer durations of time. And that's very important. I think it's important to invest in that family's lives as well, too, young and old. Our ministry really is about the residents, and we have a lot with the VS program. You get a lot of energy into that, and sometimes we can neglect our families. I think it's important that we consider that as well. The other thing that I want to just add is every family will contribute differently, depending on the age of their children, where they're at in life. So to learn to give some flexibility and to not to be so rigorous about that. And it just takes some ebb and flow. We can find ways to adapt. Another one that I found in an organization where the men are often connected, make sure that the wives have a place to connect with each other as well, too. I think that that's so important because most of us men, we see each other every day. The wives may be in different areas, and they're part of the unit, but maybe are feeling disconnected for that. Another one that, as I talked to my team, they just said, be careful with. It's amazing how often small little things Satan wants to use to cause divisions. One of those simple things can be is that one family knows about something that another family didn't. Or maybe one husband shared something with his wife and another husband didn't. And that can cause division and think that somehow my spouse is less than another. And I just say, let's not forget that those are enemy attacks to try to cause division.
Okay. Laverne, Jonas, we're kind of winding down, but briefly, what do you do when there's a row of children?
I mean, it's the part of making them feel a part of the program. I think it's important to make them feel like they're wanted, they're needed, they're part of it. I think that's huge. I say that.
Jonas?
Likewise, I think for families to help their children to be involved and engaged in the ministry. One thing on foreign field especially that we find is the challenge of, so we men, we go on the field and we engage in our ministries, but for our wives and families, their work doesn't really change that much. It almost adds to their work, so sometimes social workers and other people around them to assist with that is great.
Yeah, I just throw in the observation that observing a Christian family is one of the strongest witnesses that someone in the community or ministry can take. To see a husband and a wife functioning as husband and wife, to see a row of children being raised for the Lord, makes a pretty big impact. Jonas, how do you balance achieving the mission with the needs of the individual VSers? What I hear from VS units is that often the VSers are the mission people.
That continues to be a challenge. We're all human, and we have our needs, and when you go on the mission field, those become quite evident, and working with other people. And first of all, there needs to be a vibrant relationship with God, but even beyond that, especially on the foreign field, the mission field kind of has two prongs. The first one is being able to relate with other missionaries that you're working with. And the other one is to build good relationships with those that you're serving or for the purpose that you're there. And in our experience, if all your interest is in compound living or among the other missionaries, and you're not very effective out there, what's the purpose in being there? On the other hand, if someone goes and they put all their energies into the nationals and those kinds of things, but have broken relationships among the unit, their labors also are challenged and become and can become ineffective. So I think both of them need to be there. And if one or the other side is not where it should be or not up to power, it can hinder effectiveness. We do encourage our staff to take adequate time for themselves and their families by days off or doing in-country vacations, something that will rejuvenate their lives and encouragement. Regular staff meetings where that you can come together as missionaries, you talk about current issues, plans, so that there's not things happening that present a surprise to the rest or cause questions or those kinds of things, but more of an open format where these things can be worked through and discussed. When a missionary becomes the mission field, it can become very draining to the other people. And yeah, there's ways that we work through that. Sometimes I think a mentoring program can be very helpful. But if it becomes too heavy, maybe there has to be some way to, whether it's seek a dismissal or find ways to help those kinds of needs.
Okay, thank you. We've used our time. There is one question at the end here. Oops, where'd it go? Oh, it's not there. Just bale your hay real tight here, tight as you can. You have a volunteer, and it is not working out. What do you do, Mr. Phil?
We try to seek first to understand. One of the things that I would just say is one, I think one thing that often we miss is that all behavior is an attempt to communicate. So we want to first of all make sure that they're communicating. If we just can't work it out, then we do have to find a way for us to part in good terms possible.
Jonas, not working out.
First of all, sometimes we have to try to understand what the reason is that it's not working out, and I find that there's a variety of reasons why the not working out syndrome is happening. Sometimes it's because of unforeseen home situations, or it could be staff-related stresses where personalities clash, or the work is just not being a good fit. Sometimes it is moral failures or issues. And I think a lot of times it's just simply trying to understand and care about that need.
Okay, Laverne, not working out. 15 seconds.
I think need to have enough conversations ahead of time that person can almost make the call himself. It's like he pretty much says, I need to leave camp. Because we've already had this many conversations. So up to this point, it's like, that's kind of where I'm headed. And then also communicate with the VS's family and maybe church, but at least helping the family understand that that's what's happening too. It's not just this surprise that suddenly my son or my daughter is no longer at your mission. So communication with the home folks as well.
Thank each of you for your part. Turn back to the moderator.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from Reach 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from Reach or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.